Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbagast, the only baseball podcast in the world emotionally prepared for the Aaron Hicks Orioles bounce back. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman. Let's see some magic, baby.
Emotionally overjoyed and excited for the Aaron Hicks bounce back. I think it's the right way to do it. Yes, we are back. We took Memorial Day off. We decided, okay, maybe we don't actually have to podcast three times a week, but we missed each other so much. And we are
Cal Ripken, yes. Ashamed of us.
He should be. He should be. I'd be ashamed of us too. But we hope you guys enjoyed your holiday weekend. We are back here with the baseball podcast. On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we're going to talk a little college ball. We're going to have our friend Stephen Schock on to talk about the upcoming college baseball regional weekend. The Field of 64 was announced on Monday, and we now know the teams that will be competing to go to Omaha. And if you don't like college baseball or care about college baseball, give it a shot. I think Stephen Schock will help convince you. And then in the back half of the show, we are going to talk about, as you mentioned, Aaron Hicks. Jake is going to ask me why haven't players stolen a base yet, which is a fun game I'm looking forward to. And we are going to also talk about some prospects, including Ethan Salas, a 16-year-old minor leaguer. But the first part of our show is going to be a little bit different because, unfortunately, one of the biggest stories in baseball right now involves the Los Angeles Dodgers, Clayton Kershaw, Trevor Williams, Anthony Bass to some degree, although we're not going to talk about that very much, and some backlash involving some Pride Month activities and events coming up next month. And I think that the best way to phrase our disappointment as we enter into this conversation is the fact that it is not even Pride Month yet, and here we are with Major League Baseball kind of disappointing us in more ways than one. And we wanted to start with this because this is a topic that is important, first of all. It is a topic that deserves a lot of attention and respect, and also attention and, again, we have an opportunity to say that we disagree with what is going on here, and so we wanted to take that opportunity to do that. We don't always weigh in on Twitter necessarily, but we think this is an important topic. So, Jake, we're not going to spend too much time on this, but we do want to lay out the facts and kind of present where we stand and our perspective on this.
May 31st, man, it's Pride Month Eve.
Yeah,
Pride Month Eve. We haven't even started yet, and the baseball world is already slightly showing its ass. Not slightly, showing its ass a little bit. So it is one of the biggest stories in sports right now and in baseball is the situation between the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, a community organization in Los Angeles and around the country. They were invited as part of the Los Angeles Dodgers Pride Month celebration, their Pride Night. They were, I believe, being honored as like a community hero, I think is the term that they were using. The Dodgers then like reneged that invitation after backlash from the Catholic community specifically. Okay. After, I believe, 5 days, the Dodgers changed their mind and re-invited the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence back into Pride Night. And that has received backlash again, as it did the first time. Now, what are the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, Jordan?
Yes. So this is, and again, with a lot of good reporting on this, of course, you can find it on Washington Post. So I'll read this from Chelsea James's story on this situation. The Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence were founded in San Francisco in 1979 as an LGBTQ+ advocacy and fundraising group. They have since opened chapters across the country and include straight, gay, and non-binary members who dress in brightly colored habits and cloaks, paint their faces, and, as the Los Angeles chapter's website puts it, quote, make people happy, stamp out guilt brought on by a judgmental society, and help various organizations and charities. And again, from the AP, the Sisters, a group of mainly men who dress as nuns, as a charity, protest, and performance group that was founded in 1979 in San Francisco. And yes, they were planned to receive the Community Hero Award by the Dodgers. Now, as we just said, that is what they are presenting as. But as they have said very much, the group denied it as anti-Catholic. On its website, the group says it uses, quote, humor and irreverent wit to expose the forces of bigotry, complacency, and guilt that can chain the human spirit.
Now, the point of contention here for a lot of people in the Catholic community is by dressing up as nuns, it is seen as a mockery of something that is very important to a lot of people, right? That is not something that we understand as Jews, right? Like, that being said, that is where a lot of the, you know, sentiment against Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence is coming from. And I think that is important to understand where it's coming from and why, even though, as we were about to say, we vehemently disagree, like passionately, with a lot of the players who have come out against the sisters being invited. And that includes Clayton Kershaw, who is the Dodgers, and more, you know, pertinently to us is like Trevor Williams of the Washington Nationals, someone who we have known for a long, long time, someone who we consider a friend, someone who I have had many conversations with over the last couple of years about religion and baseball and society, et cetera. And I was, and we are, incredibly disappointed, saddened, and like by what he put out, by the statement that he said. And like, I just think that's important to say and to mention, and like making sure that baseball is creating a space for people who don't have a space, who people, you know, queer people who don't feel comfortable always coming to games or being a part of this community. Anything that like pulls the rope in the wrong direction away from that is just such a problem and just so counterproductive to what this game and this space should be.
Yeah. And while people like Kershaw and, you know, Trevor Williams have focused on specifically saying, I don't agree with making fun of people's religions. No one should ever do that. That's what I don't agree with. You know, Kershaw saying it's not about anything else. That's fine. But what's important here is, of course, to recognize the context, the larger context, not just of baseball or this specific situation and getting bogged down by the details of the back and forth with the Dodgers and the specifics of the group, is the larger, you know, dynamic at play, not just in baseball, but in the country. And right now, it is not a time to be pushing back in any way against the advancement of rights and comfort for the LGBTQ community in this country, not to mention during Pride Month, of course, at any point. But there is active legislation being made to make these people's lives worse. And when you consider how the existence of Catholics in America, or, you know, in most places, like, that is the norm, that is the standard. And if the cost of some amount of mockery, and I can understand if it's something you take very seriously, that you can be offended by it, that's okay. I guess I disagree with it. But you have to realize the larger situation here, which is that the people in these communities are at risk all the time. And right. the youth in these communities are literally at risk all the time. And that is so much more important to both highlight and to empower those groups and to recognize that those groups are in a place of constant, you know, marginalization. And anything that we are pushing back towards that, even if that is not the intention, is not helpful, counterproductive, and disappointing.
Trevor, specific, like his faith and his adherence to his faith in a lot of cases is like the guiding light to his life. And I have no issue with that. The issue here is that in this specific instance, in this topic, it is blinding him and making him unable to see the bigger picture here, to see past the specific situation, to understand that the power imbalance at play is so out of whack, right? And that is what is so disappointing here, because like Pride Month exists and these Pride events exist because the queer community has been excluded and marginalized from baseball, specifically from locker rooms, right, in within the sport, and from stadiums, and from our society as a whole. And like statements like this move the entire conversation in the wrong direction, and like it is important to look out for and speak up for the people that are on the more vulnerable side of this conversation. And like the other thing that's so disappointing is like, it's just Trevor's like looping himself in with like the wrong side, for lack of a better term. And maybe it isn't that binary, and maybe like we're oversimplifying things here. I feel just so compelled, like passionately compelled, that it's just so unequivocally wrong.
Yeah.
And like is regressive and disappointing and misguided, and like it's just
it's disappointing. Yeah. And that's why we felt it was important to say, obviously we are no authority on the matter, and there are plenty of people in the queer community, in the baseball community, who feel this much more directly, and we encourage that you support those people and listen to those people. Again, like we have to stand up when there's clearly groups that need to be stood up for, and there's ones who will always be in charge and will always be in power. And I don't believe that Trevor in particular holds hateful views, but the outcome here is still a similar and ends up being in the same group of actual dummies and bigots and people who are going to jump in the replies and be like, yeah, you know, hell yeah. Like, no, like that's what we don't want. And that's unfortunate. And that's not, that is why we say regressive. And that is why we say we're moving in the wrong direction.
And it's like an intention versus impact situation, right? Mm-hmm. Like Trevor's intention doesn't, and like, I guess Kershaw and, you know, a lot of these, I don't want to just put it all on. Like it doesn't really matter. The impact here is that you're making this a less safe space for a lot of people, and that's a bad thing.
Yep.
So,
and we hope as we move this along here, we hope that as Pride Month actually begins, and we do know that there are allies in the baseball space, we hope that these events across the league give the opportunity for players to speak up in a positive way and to communicate that this should be a space that we want to bring more people into. Because as you know, listening to us, that is our goal with anything that we do in baseball, is to bring more people in and for people to want to be a part of it. So we'll leave it at that. I just want to say
like, and also like specifically as it pertains to us, like we want the people who feel vulnerable and unsafe and unseen to feel comfortable in the spaces that we are creating. And like, if we're not ever doing that, and this has happened in the past, like if we're not doing that, let us know, call us out, give us feedback. Like that's, I don't want to put the impetus on other people, and that's not what I'm trying to do here. But like, we want to be receptive to that, and we want to grow, and we want to learn. And like, I would say to people who are other straight white dudes like us listening, have conversations with people who aren't like you. Like that's really, 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 really important. And listen and learn and read and. Hopefully this world of baseball becomes a more welcoming space in 10 years than it is today.
Yep. Well said. All right. We are going to take a quick break. And when we return, we are going to bring on our friend Stephen Schock to talk about the upcoming college baseball tournament.
I'm James Hinchcliffe, and I co-host Off Track with Hinch and Rossi with my good buddy, Indianapolis 500 champion Alexander Rossi. With the 107th running of the Indianapolis 500 officially in the books, we will be bringing every single one of you a plethora of entertaining race-related content, including an in-depth recap of the race, driver breakdowns, and overall thoughts from the greatest spectacle in racing. Then, on Thursday night, we will be dropping the final reaction podcast to the 100 Days to Indy series with a couple of special guests. Listen to it on Off Track now on the SXM app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. I am very excited to be joined by my dear friend and co-host of the Schock Factor podcast, which is now part of the SiriusXM podcast network. It is Mr. Stephen Schock, aka Big Donkey 47. Hello, Steve.
Hey, how's it going, man? I feel like we're in a alternate reality. I'm honored to be here. Truthfully, it's been a long time coming. In baseball, many people will tell you, you know, don't dwell on how far you've come, but now that I'm washed up, I've been dwelling hard. And one of the things I stumbled upon while Googling my name relentlessly, as ball players will do, was tweets from you guys. It was a quote on one of your guys' podcasts, I think the predecessor to this one, where you were talking to Kyle Peterson about me. And man, almost brought a tear to my eye. Talk about a full circle moment.
It's so crazy. It's so true, Steve. And first of all, before we proceed any further, it's important to note that Jake Mintz, the other part of my podcast and our podcast with Steve, the Schock Factor, will not be joining us for this conversation. He had some previous obligations. I know you're confused because you heard him at the beginning and the end of this podcast. Trust us. This was a worthwhile thing to send Jake off to. He left Steve to me. Maybe he was just tired of recording with Steve earlier this week. We recorded a two-hour regional preview podcast over on the Schock Factor feed. But what this is going to be, for people who aren't subscribed to that or don't necessarily follow college baseball that closely, is a much more concise and condensed primer for regional weekend, because we do love college baseball. This time of year is an incredible time to get into college baseball, because this weekend, my goodness, Steve, it will wash over us in a way that is really unlike any other weekend of the entire season. And so we wanted to bring you on, Steve, to kind of help us prepare for the tournament, especially if you have not been watching. If you have not been locked in and you have not been following all season long, we're going to give you a couple reasons as to why we think you should. So, Steve, before we get into the specifics of this year's tournament, why don't you kind of tell us about where college baseball is right now? What does it look like? What are the rosters are kind of made of? And what is an important thing to know if you are kind of getting into college baseball now?
So right now, first of all, if you're getting into college baseball right now, welcome. We're happy to have you. We love having you. College baseball has a lot of great fans, so welcome to that pool of great people. But college baseball at this juncture in time is arguably the best it has ever been. And the reasoning for that is because the pool of talent has gotten so much bigger. And why is it bigger? It's because of COVID and a bunch of different rules that were introduced then that made things a little bit more wonky. But it seems like when COVID was going on, every other day that NCAA was coming out with some different way that it was just random news that was going to make roster sizes bigger. Some way.
It was a combination of additional eligibility for players, which is still relevant now as we are not that far out. There are still players right now who are using their extra year, who are older and thus better at baseball. It was the shortened draft. The fact that the draft is shorter means there are fewer high school players that are signing and going into pro ball, and fewer college players who are signing and leaving college ball after their junior year, and they're staying around for longer. And so right now, when you combine that with the transfer portal, which allows players to move much more easily, whereas previously you had to sit out an entire year if you transferred from one D1 to another, now it is go crazy. You want to go pick it up and make your own college baseball free agency, and we got NIL money given to some of these players and some of these bigger programs, then go for it. Go find a new place, a coach you like more, a place where you're going to get more playing time. And all of that has combined to, as Steve said, a loaded college baseball pool of talent, which extends not just to the upper levels with the best teams in the power conferences, but also to the mid-major levels, which I think is very important in this tournament.
Yeah, and this time of year is so special because these teams that you might not have heard of or might not give much credit to can really catch fire. And then you add in these veteran guys who, you know, they might have played at other schools where they didn't get as much playing time, but they got experience going into the postseason. Now they're taking that experience with a ton of playing time compared to what they used to have and bringing it with these smaller schools, which is just such a cool thing to be happening. And you know, while shortening the draft did hurt a lot of guys trying to play professionally. Me personally, it happened while I was in college, but the play professionally effort level out of me was not really there. Was just kind of here to have fun and have a good time while doing it.
Yeah. Well, also your elbow probably wasn't going to allow that to happen. Yes. And again, I guess I realize I could have just introduced you as the Dippin' Dots guy, but I assume if you're listening and you recognize the voice at this point, yeah, that's who I'm talking to right now. Anyway, Steve, a team that I think people have to know about and maybe have broken through to the mainstream is LSU. And it's for a long time coming into the season, and for most of the season, it was like LSU, best team in the country, best team in the country. They had all these best incredible transfers. They had all these amazing freshmen that they had recruited, or underclassmen and juniors that they had recruited, like Dylan Cruz. They get some fancy famous transfers like Tommy White and Paul Skeens. But now they come into the tournament as the number 5 overall seed, is number one. The main thing to know about that is that their pitching besides Paul Skeens hasn't been that good. That's why they kind of fell off. But LSU is a very important part of this tournament. Would you agree?
I would definitely agree, because, you know, you spend however many weeks, probably like 13 weeks of the season at number one overall. There's probably a good reason for that. And you had mentioned Paul Skeens and the pitching staff and that kind of being where they've had some issues this season. And that's honestly the great synopsis of it. You mentioned Paul Skeens. I could go down to my corner store. Odds are, if I walked up to any guy in there who kind of knows about sports, I could be like, who's LSU's Friday night starter? They might say Paul Skeens. They might know it. After that, and I love LSU. I really like them as a team. But after that, don't really know.
they love you. LSU loves you too.
Yeah, and they have guys and they have talent. And it's just kind of, are they going to put it together? Because it's there. All the pieces are there. They made sure of that. It's just, how's it going to click?
But on offense, they are a juggernaut. We saw LSU in person earlier this year at an early season tournament. And I think one of the big takeaways was their head coach, Jay Johnson, told us something along the lines of like, I have a first round pick, like a future first rounder that I can't find at bats for. It was like, okay, well, that kind of sums that up. But yes, their lineup is about as fun as you are going to see. But the actual number one team in this tournament, Steve, is Wake Forest. Now, Wake Forest is a school that people have heard of. They succeed in other sports. It's not like a total no-name school, and they have had some good baseball teams in the past. But this year, they are a juggernaut because their pitching is amazing. Their pitching is amazing, which is very rare in college baseball nowadays. And they are the number one overall seed. But what makes Wake Forest so interesting in a historical context is that while they have had success in the ACC in recent years, we've had them winning seasons, we've seen them in the postseason, they have not been to Omaha since 1955. And now they're the best team in the country by far, and the pressure is on for them to make it to Omaha for the first time since 1955. And while they are certainly not an underdog just because they are that, it does put the pressure on them in a very unique way. And I know you got to spend some time with Wake Forest at the ACC tournament recently, and you're a believer in Wake Forest and the pitching lab inspired dominant pitching staff that they have.
Yeah, I'm all in on this Wake Forest ball club. Obviously, I played in the ACC back in the day, so I'm a little biased. I want to see the conference do better, just a little bit more than I want to see other conferences do well. But it's when you think of the ACC, you think of these schools that, you know, maybe they cost a lot of money, maybe they're expensive, maybe they're richer campuses and more focused on education. Well, this is where the two worlds collide, because, you know, they're going to have so many students who go on and like work for Driveline, work in different fields of college baseball or just baseball in general, because they have this experience. It's going to be like when Driveline started and Kyle Bodie was like getting offers from every different organization to be a pitching coach, because they can find ways and teach people how to implement this technology in ways that other people can't and don't know about yet. And so it's just really cool to see all of that work come to fruition, the combination of working smarter and harder, because, you know, people will say work smarter, not harder, but if you do both, whoa,
watch out.
That's a lot of work getting done.
That is a great call and a good way to summarize Wake Forest. And yeah, the talent on that team is sensational. But I think that's another big picture thing that I want, you know, casual fans to kind of understand. And I think you could infer this, and you see this in other college sports, but indeed, these bigger conferences, namely, especially in baseball, the SEC and the ACC are indeed dominant. 18 of the 64 teams are from the SEC or the ACC, 10 from the SEC, 8 from the ACC, 8 of the hosts, the 16 regional host sites are SEC teams, which is astounding. But Steve, I kind of want to spin this in the other direction towards mid-majors, but do you have any thought about that or something else?
Oh, I was just going to mention another thing I really like about Wake Forest that's important to understand about college baseball is I tweet about kids all year long, so I always feel weird meeting them in person, because like, I never know, like, what if they like it and retweet it, but it's just like, oh, well, other people like to retweet it. Like, I think this guy's weird, or I think this guy might smell like cheese, or, wow, I thought this guy smells like cheese, and he does smell like cheese. That's something that could...
I thought he smelled like cheese, and he smells worse.
Yeah, this guy, the worst compliment the worst thing I can hear from a player is, wow, you're exactly how I expected you to be, because the way I imagine that
I have seen Steve get that compliment many times. Walking with Steve in Omaha last year was it was really, really I think my favorite thing, again, just total side tangent, but if you follow Steve and the best thing is Steve, it's like, oh yeah, I follow you on Twitter. It's like, yeah, no, I know. That's why you recognize him. Thank you.
Thank you.
Steve's like, oh.
But Wake Forest, like, they're just normal dudes. Like, I met them. They're just, like, cool guys. And that's how anyone in college baseball is, because, like, you know, they're still, like, people at the end of the day. Like, their best pitcher, Rhett Lauder, my favorite – I watched him shove in the ACC tournament. Favorite thing about the weekend from him, I learned he does art. He's really good at it too, but he's just like a normal dude. Like he's walking around the stadium talking to people. Like that's the main difference I would say between college baseball and professional is just the access you have to players. That's why like bringing kids to games is such a good idea. Cause like every college player sees a kid at a game and, you know, they might get annoyed that they're being asked for a ball over and over again. But at the end of the day, if you ever like, I saw it a million times where I'd be in the bullpen and a freshman would be like, man, these kids are annoying. And you just look at them and like, I would do this to be a dick mainly, but just be like, you were that kid one day. And they would always feel horrible because the goof around
put him in their place,
serious. And then I'd be like, no, I totally understand, but it's hilarious how like flustered you just got.
That's great. So Steve, again, we talk about Wake Forest, talk about LSU. And you know they represent these big conferences. But I would say what I am most excited about in this tournament is the possibility for some of these mid-majors to break through. And I'm not gonna bother to tell you about the specific rosters and why these certain teams are so good. And you can go listen to the Shock Factor and D1 Baseball Podcast Network and hear more specifically about them. But if you are the easiest way to sell anybody on things is, okay, who are the underdog? Who should I? Because obviously, if you're watching, the casual person tuning in is not going to be rooting for LSU. I realize that, and that's fine. If you want to root against them, that is also fun. The way a lot of people enjoyed rooting against Tennessee. And it's worth noting with Wake Forest that only one number one overall seed has won the entire thing since the format was introduced in the late 90s, and that's the 1999 Miami Hurricanes. So being number one overall is not even good. In fact, the last 3 years, the number one overall seed hasn't even made it to Omaha, let alone win at all. But I am so excited about the possibilities that some of these mid-majors can break through. We haven't had a mid-major that is a non-Power 5. Now, Power 5 is really Power 4 in college baseball because the Big Ten is kind of behind some of these other mid-major conferences. But we have not had a team that's not from the SEC, ACC, Big 12, and Pac-12, or Big Ten, in Omaha since 2017, Cal State Fullerton. And I think this year is as good a year as any for us to see it because the way that the bracket shook out, we have teams like Campbell, teams like Coastal Carolina, teams like East Carolina, teams like Dallas Baptist, teams like Indiana State. These are teams that have been so successful, and Southern Miss. These are really, really strong programs, but they've never made it to Omaha. But the way the bracket shakes out this year, they all have an excellent opportunity to get there. And I hope at least one of them breaks through because having those unique communities and those unique fan bases get to be on the Omaha stage is so much fun. And seeing all those fan bases come together over those 2 weeks in Omaha is so much fun. And I would like to have a little bit more variety there. And I think we will get a mid-major in Omaha this year. I feel really good about it. And you just have to pick which one you want to root for. And I know which ones you're rooting for, but that is my and if you want some help, you know, you can email us baseballbarbercast@gmail.com and I can give you some tips on some teams to check in on. But that is what I'm most excited about in this tournament. But Steve, what is one thing that you are most excited for or one regional before we wrap this up to kind of get people excited for this weekend?
One regional I'm super excited for. Well, I want to touch on what you just said because that was a great point. Just real quick, I can't let it go without saying, now, if you're listening to this episode, you're like, wow, college baseball sucks. I hate this. I don't want to. Why would I ever be interested in that? I only like the pros. Well, I just want to point out, Jordan just mentioned the Campbell Camels, which a large majority of people may know. Cedric Mullins played baseball there. Now he plays for the Orioles. Very good at baseball. And you're thinking, look, again, I'm a professional baseball guy. I'm not interested in this. Like, I want to see who's in our pipeline, who's going to be in the MLB next year. Well, last year, the Campbell Camels played the Tennessee Volunteers around this time. And in that game, we had a young man by the name of Ben Joyce playing against a young man by the name of Zach Neto, who are both playing. They are both teammates with Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout this season, 1 year later. So, playing with entirely different bats.
And probably entirely different balls.
Yeah, well, we won't get too far into that. The balls might be juiced. There are 2.25 home runs per Division I college baseball game compared to last year where it was like 1.89. Mm-hmm. Home runs are sick. There should be more of them. I'm fine with it. If you like seeing preposterously long home runs, if you've ever looked at an MLB guy and gone, wow, I wonder what it'd be like if he had a hunk of metal. There are guys with like big league pop, I would say, like maybe not top end right now because they're college guys right now, but on their way to top end big league pop. And with the metal bats, it is just ridiculous what they can do. Last season, there was a grown man by the name of Griffin Dorsching hit a ball 513 feet. Really fun. I think it broke a building a little bit, like broke a chunk off. It really cool stuff. So it's like you can see some preposterous stuff in college baseball. And I think there's going to be a good amount of it in the Charlottesville regional, where my biased self thinks the Virginia Cavaliers will win. But they are taking on Army to open it up, which we talked about the transfer portal to open up this little segment where you let me into your big boy podcast. And Virginia is one of their top starting pitchers is Connelly Early, who came in to Virginia from Army. So he transferred from Army. So it's kind of like they're playing for the love of his heart. It's like love in basketball. It's really just a beautiful situation going on there.
Yeah, and we have a couple examples like that. Andrew Lindsay, one of Tennessee's best pitchers, might be pitching against Charlotte, where he transferred from a couple years ago. So I don't know if the committee does this on purpose when they set up these brackets, but it certainly makes it all the more intriguing. And yeah, I agree. I think that Charlottesville will be a fun one. East Carolina, certainly one of your favorite mid-major teams, will be in that Charlottesville regional along with Oklahoma, a team we saw in the College World Series last year. I would say the one regional that I'm looking forward to is probably Clemson. Clemson, a team that you might, oh, Clemson, of course, they're good. When they're good at football, they're not good at baseball. Well, they really haven't been that good at baseball recently. They got a new coach, Eric Backich, who came over from the University of Michigan. And in his first year, he won the ACC tournament. They've won, I believe, 16 games in a row going into the tournament, and they will be hosting down in Clemson, South Carolina. And Tennessee, the team that if you watch college baseball even casually last year, you know all about, you know, that team's not entirely the same, but a lot of their best players, certainly on the mound, are still there, and they will be a part of that regional, which I am very much excited for. But what I can say is the easiest way to enjoy this weekend is at 1 o'clock on Friday, turn on Squeeze Play, hosted by our good friend Mike Rooney, also part of the D1 Baseball Podcast Network, Matt Schick. I mean, I assume Chris Budden, they're going to have the whole squad there. They will do the work for you. Talk about working. That is working less hard. Talk about working smarter, not harder. Put on Squeeze Play. They will do. You will not do any work. You will sit on your couch and they will take you around all the best games and all the best moments of the day. But we hope that this was a good primer. And Steve, how can people follow you? What will you be doing this weekend? What is your plan for regional weekend?
So this weekend, it's a little cloudy because I coach high school baseball here in Delaware, and the boys may be fighting for a state championship on Saturday. So tomorrow night, I'm going to have to make a very, very hard decision, potentially. So we'll see. It's looking like Charlottesville regional if things go poorly high school baseball wise, but if things go well high school baseball wise, I have no idea. But if you want to follow me on the interwebs to find out the enthralling answer to what is going to happen with Steven Schock, the Dippin' Dots guy who's washed up with no elbow, in his Delaware high school state baseball championship endeavors, follow BigDonkey47 on Twitter or Steven_Schock on Instagram, where I don't really post. I don't even know why I plugged that one, if I'm being honest.
We're friends because we're the same, right? We don't really post on Instagram, even though we should.
It's like, it's there. I've posted like 3 baseball clips and each of them probably have like 100,000 views. Right. I should definitely, all the signs are like, hey, post on me.
He's too busy making hats and sending tweets. And if you wondered, right, if you ever saw that clip of Steve or you see his tweets come up and you say, like, what's that guy's deal? Just know we not so humbly endorse this man as our friend, as our podcast co-host. We hope you listen to us with Steve on the Schock Factor podcast. which we couldn't have had if he didn't have such a convenient name to name a podcast. So thank you to the Shock family, going back as many generations as it is. But thank you, Steve, for joining me on this episode of Baseball Barbacast, not the Shock Factor, which, of course, we will bring back next week. Any final words before I send it to break, Steve?
No, I think we got a good break coming. I heard Motley Crue might be here for it, so we'll see. But thank you so much for having me on here. If you do choose, if this episode has flipped you and you're like, wow, now I love college baseball, then know that my life is complete. So if that happened to you and you feel compelled to tell me, just know that might run the risk that I'm like, all right, time to go live by the stream just in the middle of nowhere. Just know that I will be honored from that, but also you run the risk of turning me into a recluse.
All right. Well, on that very reasonable note, we will send this to break and we will be back afterwards with Jake Mintz. He will be back to finish out the podcast with me. Thank you, Steve.
Thanks.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. No more college for us. We have graduated, and now it is time to discuss Major League Baseball, which I believe is growing in popularity all across this great nation. We have not podcasted for a while. I guess we took one day off, but it feels like forever. Let's hop in to the very bizarre and fascinating situation involving the San Diego Padres television distribution.
Yes. And so this is a story that we have not covered too much on the podcast, but it is definitely an important one. And it involves how Major League Baseball games are broadcast. If you have MLB TV and you're bouncing around to a bunch of different games over the course of an evening, you know that not every game is necessarily broadcast by the same company. Some teams, like the Yankees, you know, have their own network, and that, you know, simplifies things in some senses. But there is one group, one large conglomerate company known as the Diamond Sports Group, which owns what is known as the Bally group of networks. And that is not going so well for Diamond Sports Group.
Yeah, we are not going to get into like the specifics of that. But what you need to know is that the money is running out. And there has been a little bit of bankruptcy, as it is said. And what that has led to is a situation where this company is unable to make the necessary payments to the teams for the broadcast rights. And what that means is that the teams are then allowed legally to take alternative measures to broadcast their games. The Padres are the first team now where they have not been paid, I believe, like past a certain date. Mm-hmm. And so starting tonight, Wednesday night, games are going to be broadcast by the Padres in a way that like we have never seen before in MLB.
Right. Which most notably will include MLB basically taking over the production and distribution of these games in a way that will allow San Diegans to watch on MLB TV with a certain package with no blackouts. Because the reason that blackouts exist is because the companies who are paying, or at least when they are paying a lot of money to have, theoretically, when they are paying, have a lot of money, paying a lot of money to be able to have the rights to broadcast these games in these markets, they do not want you to have to be able to kind of jump over that that barrier that they have made and thus stop you from watching it through other alternative means, aka MLB TV, in the market. However, in this case, when that is not the situation, MLB is going to, with obviously a deal, it's not going to be suddenly free, but with it, you can buy a specific Padres package. I am interested in this because there are other, obviously plenty of other teams with Bally, and the fact that the Padres were the first team, and this I'm sure involves stuff that I don't entirely understand, but the fact that the Padres were the first team for them to not pay, whereas like they did pay the Reds, they paid some of these other teams that are going to keep it, is kind of odd and funny to me, and almost another funny chapter in this weird Padres season.
Yeah, because there was like a quote or a statement from someone with Diamond Sports that was like, the Padres specific financial agreement like is not feasible for us at this current point in time, blah blah blah. If the Padres were like the best team in baseball, do they make the payment? Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. What's weird about this is it is a very bizarre time to go to Padres fans and say, all right, $7.99 for the season. $79.99 for the season. Because if I'm a Padres fan, I'm like, oh, well, our run differential is zero and we're 8 games back of the Dodgers. And I don't want to think or watch the Padres at all right now until they figure it out.
True. But also, as I have made the point about MLB TV, and if you think I'm shilling for the league, that's fine. MLB TV is an absolute steal. I know it is expensive. Yeah. Like, it is literally thousands of games. I mean, yes, easy to say for us because we're literally watching multiple games every single day. But I think what's important here is, again, you can see this on MLB.com. It says, the new arrangement, which gives fans the options to watch on television or stream digitally, expands the reach of Padres games from approximately 1.13 million homes to approximately 3.264 million homes in Padres home television territory. The increase of 2.1 million homes marks a 189% jump in reach, which is like, yeah, duh, okay, well, why we're all so mad at blackouts. We want more people to watch the Padres. We want more people to watch all these teams. So it's like, duh. And now it's obviously more complicated than just doing this in every single market. But if we are heading in this direction, there could be an obvious benefit, at least in the short term. At some point, it might end up all costing what it was before and being more complicated and being more messy. That's true. And obviously, there are some markets where this is never going to happen because of how strong the television deals are. But the basic outcome here, I think, is an obvious positive, even though, to your point, it is a funny time to be like, hey, buy this package to watch the Padres, who are really disappointing.
Well, yeah, and it's funny because MLB is saying the loud part out loud, where they're like, this is a better setup so that more people can watch baseball while also maintaining the blackouts. Now, I genuinely believe that Rob Manfred wants to get rid of blackouts. Now, he is beholden to a variety of other financial realities and ownership and these TV companies. I think all things equal, he would get rid of them, right? And so I think it is a good thing that MLB is recognizing that this type of setup, while maybe a little bit more confusing and complicated in the short term, is going to result in more people having the ability to watch baseball. And that is a good thing. Hmm? Speaking about baseball, related to baseball, let's talk about Aaron Hicks.
Aaron Hicks, San Diego native, right? I know he has a new team now. If maybe he's a Padres fan, he can now watch the Padres much more easily if he's living in San Diego. The Orioles have been, I know they won last night, but they have had an interesting little stretch. But most notably, their arguably best player, or at least top two player from this season, Cedric Mullins, has gone down with an injury. Now, we hope that it is not serious, but it is serious enough for the Orioles to dip into the free agent pool in May, which is not normally the time you dip into the free agent pool, and pick up the recently DFA'd Aaron Hicks, switch hitter who is still switch hitting and still playing center field. And Aaron Hicks, he already has a little bit of facial hair. We love to see that. His face has been liberated from the Yankees' no facial hair policy. And obviously, when you see famous guy DFA'd and any team, there's going to be a reaction. He signed before Eric Hosmer, so that stands out. Give him credit for that. But I think you put it well yesterday when we were talking about this, because I'm sure people want to hear from you in terms of what an Orioles fan is really feeling about this move and how important it is one way or the other.
Yeah, I mean, I see it as an upside-only move. If Aaron Hicks continues to suck for 3 weeks, and then the Orioles jettison him and they figure something else out, like, okay, whatever, fine. But the upside here is that Aaron Hicks is like 80% of what he once was. Mm-hmm. And the Orioles just were like, thanks. Yes, please. And being around Aaron Hicks in the Bronx this year, it is obvious that he was miserable, mm-hmm. miserable. He was having a bad time at the office every day. He was detached. He was like emotionally distant. He was just like out of it, understandably, because he was being booed every single day and it just wasn't fun for him to come to work. This is a fresh start, classic change of scenery situation. Do I think he's going to be good? No, I really don't. But if he is, that's great. And if he's not, the Orioles will, call someone else up or sign someone. The problem is if they like just keep him on the roster for the rest of the season and he's taking away at bats for no reason. Like that's when it becomes an issue. I don't foresee that happening because the Orioles aren't really paying him anything here, right?
Yeah, no, that's the it's very, very low risk for sure. Mike Elias had an interesting quote when asked about why they had this. And he said, "We have stuff that we look at from a scouting and evaluation perspective that, as I've said before, is very different from just looking at the back of a baseball card. And we hope we get a bounce back from anyone that we bring in. Which
so,
is,
yeah, I can expand on that a little bit. Mm-hmm. The Orioles love swing decision guys. They love players who make the correct decisions. And what that generally means is swinging at good pitches and taking bad pitches. Aaron Hicks is like a Gunnar Henderson level passive player, right? Where he's like a never swing guy. And the Orioles think that that is something that they can work with, that they can help him mechanically because he has the things that are hard to teach. He has a great eye, right? And that is the type of thing that they as an organization really do focus on, right? Mm-hmm. And feel like is a part of what they do well. And so it does kind of make a little bit of sense. Now, do I think he can be a good defensive center fielder still? Not really.
But it remains to, yeah. Also, at some point, you do have to impact the baseball when you do swing.
Of course.
But which Aaron Hicks has been doing very limited recently. But to your point, low risk, who cares if it's good? And I think, as you said yesterday, the one homer that he hits will be really cool. That's a good way to think about this. If he can contribute to one win in the Orioles season, that will be great. Because you know what that one win will be? One win that the Yankees didn't have. So, like, that's if you're contributing in any sort of direction towards beating the Yankees, whether it is against the Yankees directly or competing in the AL East standings, that is a huge win. So not that big of a deal, but I understand why people are like, whoa, Aaron Hicks on the Orioles.
It turns out that the only way to escape Cedric Mullins is a strained right groin.
Yes.
It's not Cedric Mullins again.
It's Aaron Hicks. He flew out to right.
I can't escape him.
I can't escape him. Also, for those listening who personally grew up with Aaron Hicks in Long Beach, California, I apologize. I don't know why I thought he was a San Diego native. For some reason, I had that in my head. So apologies to the Long Beach native, whether he was a Padres fan or not. Who's to say? All right, let us move on to some great news. Jake Liam Hendricks is pitching in Major League Baseball again. This is just like kind of a, like, first of all, wow, medical marvel research that we are able to get people who are diagnosed cancer 5 months later back in a Major League mound is amazing. So that's incredible. And I'm sure Liam Hendricks would tell you the same thing about his experience during his treatment. But this is awesome. Of course, we followed the story and everybody's been rooting for Liam, and also it was just like watching, it was like, oh yeah, that is someone. I know his first outing didn't go super great, but it was still like, oh yeah, that's Liam Hendricks. He is a very important part of this team, and it might be a little bit too late for them, but it is still cool to see him back out there regardless.
Yeah, Liam Hendricks beat cancer, and now he has an even more daunting task, which is making the White Sox good. Not really. Like, it is as simple as this. He is back. He is on a mound. It is delightful to see. The fact that he is healthy, forget about baseball. Like, the fact that he is healthy this quickly is really just like a gift.
Yes.
Right? It is amazing. And to see him on a mound and to see him, like, it appears that he has an increased level of appreciation for what he has and what he is and what he's able to do. And that is wonderful. Even though, like, the path that took him to this place was obviously less than ideal, it is certainly inspiring to see him back on a mound.
Also, his wife, Christy Hendricks, who, of course, has been a big part of this journey with him, but her in the first outing, like, getting slow-mo shots of her, like, MFing the umpires was incredible. I love that. That's exactly the kind of support that she is going to continue to give to Liam.
Because, like, has this experience mellowed Liam Hendricks out on the mound? Like, is he going to not curse anymore? I doubt it, right?
I doubt it, which is great. So congrats to Liam. Very good to have him back. All right, couple, speaking of beating the odds. Oh, there we go. There's a good transition. Two marvelous home run feats we wanted to mention. One is that Jose Abreu hit one. Wow, that shouldn't have been news. As our vice president once said, we did it, Jose. We hit a home run. Jose Abreu hit a home run against the A's. He came bolting around the bases. I believe he gave us the fastest sprint speed on a home run this season, and possibly of, like, fastest sprint speed of Jose Abreu's life. I don't know if how this measures to him, you know, going first to home on a double, but I mean, he was booking it. He was smiling. He was borderline laughing. He was gleeful, relieved, of course, that he finally poked one over the fence after signing with the Astros and being one of the worst hitters in baseball. Has that turned his whole season around? Probably not. He had a near grand slam last night to right field in Houston against Minnesota that was caught at the wall. And I was like, oh, that could have been the second one. But for now, we will celebrate the one home run that I will not have to ask Jose Abreu once again why he hasn't homered yet. Him sliding in, essentially sliding into the dugout was incredible. It was just all around delightful. And it's one of those things where it got to the point, like, if this had happened in maybe even the first week of May, I think he would have been more like, oh, okay, fine, that's good. But this was like joyous. This was like, I can still hit home runs, and that feels good.
It kind of reminded me of the scene in Angels in the Outfield where like the players are carried by the Angels, right? And they are being lifted. Like to see him sprinting that fast around the bases felt like a physical anomaly. That, you know, there was like Matthew McConaughey, or like when Matthew McConaughey is lifted, right? Mm-hmm. It was like there has to be an extraterrestrial metaphysical force propelling Jose Abreu this quickly. There has to be.
It was great. It was great. And then the other one that was just shocking in terms of the likelihood of this happening was Jack Sawinski, who sneaky, ridiculous pop for the Pittsburgh Pirates in his second year. Now, he does strike out a lot. Defense a little bit inconsistent, but a fun player. You know, someone they got in the trade from San Diego a couple years back. But Jack Sawinski did something that I believe only Barry Bonds has done. Yes, and that is hit two splash hits in one game in Pittsburgh. In Pittsburgh, what am I saying? In San Francisco for Pittsburgh. And this is incredible because, first of all, it does sort of make sense because if we were making, like, this is, if you watch Jack Sawinski hit home runs, this is usually what they look like.
Right. To have a splash hit, to hit it into McCovey Cove from home plate all the way out over the fence, past that walkway and into the water, it's not just about hitting a home run. It's about hitting a big boy home run. And Jack Sawinski's home runs are big boy home runs. They do not scrape the wall, right? Mm-hmm. There is a difference between hitting one out to right and hitting one into the water. Mm-hmm. I think we love the splash hits in San Francisco. It's something that we talk about a lot. A right-handed hitter has never hit one. And that is like one of the most, like, I'm waiting for that moment. It's going to be great.
That was a big part of why I would have been somewhat excited for Aaron Judge to go to San Francisco. I think that would have made it a real shot that we could have seen something like that. And whenever Pete Alonso plays, it's a very short list of right-handed hitters. But again, Jack Sawinski is perfect to do it, but to do it twice in one game is remarkable. It's remarkable. Now, it's worth saying that, you know, the second one was off of a position player. So does that make it a little bit less exciting? Yes, but also there have been probably other situations where someone could have done it off a position player for the second time and they didn't. And Jack Sawinski did. And he seized the opportunity, and we love it.
Jordan Schusterman, before we do a little bit of prospect chat, I have a game for you.
All right.
Now, on this show, you will play Why Haven't You Homered Yet with me, mm-hmm. okay? And I have to say why a player hasn't homered yet. But today, we're going to flip the script, and we're going to play Why Haven't You Stolen a Base Yet,
okay? Okay. How are you sorting this? I'm excited to hear.
Most games played without a steal this season.
Okay, so just games played. All right, so we're not doing,
and I'm not
going
to go to the top of the list because, like, there are some obvious ones, right? So, like, Austin Riley. Mm-hmm. Austin Riley is really good. He has not stolen a base.
Yeah.
That is understandable.
That's
right.
Fine.
Kyle Schwarber, Jose Abreu. That's not why I'm here. I'm not here to
ask about Abreu, speedster. We see the speeds in there. So maybe he can, if he is going to, you know, help his overall numbers, that might help for Jose Abreu to snag a bag.
But I'm going to begin with Mike Trout. Mike Trout has played in 52 games this year. He has zero steals. Mike Trout, why haven't you stolen a base yet?
Well, I think you just kind of gave away the answer there, which is that Mike Trout's played 52 games and has been uninjured. And I don't think he's going to risk any sort of busted, as we've literally seen this happen, you know, a broken thumb or a hand injury, getting stepped on or some sort of thing. It's just not worth it. And while what's disappointing is that his OPS plus is only 138, he's still playing every day. And Mike Trout playing every day is better than Mike Trout stealing a base and then not playing every day. So I think that's the calculation there.
Adley Rutschman has played in 54 games. He has thrown out many people trying to steal bases. However, he has not taken one himself. Adley Rutschman, why haven't you stolen a base yet?
If I'm Adley Rutschman, I have done so much to impact Orioles winning. This is my one thing where it's like, you guys handle this part. And it's not like the Orioles haven't been running, right? That is just not, that's another thing where it's like, I am not, he's probably actively hurting the team if he is attempting to steal in that case. And Adley's smart enough to know it is not worth it. And there are other guys on the team that can step up and steal bases for him.
Colton Wong, why haven't you stolen a base yet? You stole 17 last year. Yeah. You stole 24 in 2019.
Yeah.
And now we have these big old bases, and yet you have not taken one. Colton Wong, why haven't you stolen a base yet?
This one is also pretty easy. You say he had 17 steals last year, right?
Yeah.
And what is it? You have to get on base to steal, right? Mm. That's important. Mm. Colton Wong has 17 hits this year. Jake. Mm-hmm. So he has, any time that Colton Wong has reached base, you know, the 250 OBP, there's kind of this moment of like, holy shit, like he, there we go. We did it. We got on base. This is awesome.
It's like seeing a celebrity in the wild. Seeing
And it's like, oh my God. And so you kind of have to take that in before we're even thinking about like, I'm on the, you know, I reached base. I don't want to get off the base. And the thing about Colton Wong is I believe he doesn't have any, but I believe he attempted one because I remember him either getting picked off or caught stealing. And again, it's like those trips to the bases now are unfortunately so rare, he's not going to risk having those trips shortened.
Two more. Jackie Bradley Jr., who has played a lot more than you realize for the Kansas City Royals this year, he does not have a stolen base. That feels like the whole point. Jackie Bradley Jr.
I guess, but I don't, I'm curious about what were his like high steal totals with Boston. I honestly don't even really remember. Because
that's,
I don't,
that's true. He really actually didn't run a whole lot. 17 was the most he ever had in a year.
Yeah.
But zero.
Yeah. No, I mean, I agree. You would think that there would be, that that would be part of his game. Although JBJ has always come across to me as he is a kind of a naturally gifted instinctual outfielder more than like, holy shit, he's running it down. And so I think he's probably more of a plus runner than like a, I can steal bases. But yeah, zero. I mean, that's especially for the Royals when you're trying to scrap. The offense is so bad that anytime he's on, he should be running. That is a little bit surprising.
Speaking of the Royals, the man with the most games played without a steal is Vinny Pasquantino.
Oh.
Friend of like, the
oh, Salvi. Program. I mean, this program. Is, he's, I mean, he's basically told, like he is a self-proclaimed slow lad. And Vinny also is another situation where, again, you mentioned the Royals and their offense. They cannot afford to have guys leaving the bases earlier than normal. And Vinny is doing his part to get on base. And for a team with an OBP under 300, you know, Vinny's is 343. Like, why would they ever be like, hey, dude, we're going to need you to maybe get thrown out. Like, no, it's not going to happen. Although he did he have one last year? Did he had one, right? Like trailing. And that was like a huge deal. He had like on the back, like it was a second and third steal and he was stealing second or something like that. if I recall, but that'll probably be his first and only. And honestly, if I would guess, Vinny would like to keep that stolen base percentage at 1,000 for his whole career. And I think he could, there.
That's all we got for Why Haven't You Stolen a Base Yet? Tune in next month and we'll keep this thing rolling. We're going to get out of here in a second. Before we do, Jordan, you want to talk about one or two prospects?
Yeah, Prospect Corner. We've brought this up in some past weeks, and I just think this has been a super fun week for prospects.
Can we change the name of this? I don't want to put the prospects in a corner. Can we do Prospect Pedestal?
Ooh, that's way better. Yes, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Great improvement. Great production there. That was impressive on the fly spontaneity there from my co-host. I agree. Prospect Pedestal. Who are we putting on the pedestal this week? And not like ironically, like this is, I genuine put them up on a pedestal. This is not a bad thing at all. And the first one is obvious. It's Ethan Salas. We talked about him in spring training when he was playing in Major League spring training games. This is a Venezuelan catcher who signed for over $5 million for this, with the San Diego Padres in the new January international signing period. This dude does not turn 17 until tomorrow. And I think that that's a relevant point because I have a feeling that the Padres, who clearly were going to be aggressive with Salas this year anyway, were like, you know what would be cool? If he goes and plays a minor league game while he's still 16. And they did that, and he got two hits in his affiliated debut last night. All the reports of this kid coming out of the backfields are ridiculous. He's got, I mean, the bat alone is impressive, but the fact that he is like a competent and strong defensive catcher is also amazing. The fact that he's turning 17, that means he would be a 2025 draft potentially, maybe 2024 draft if he was a high schooler. But this is a marvelous achievement, and I can't – like, we had Julio Urias pitching at 16, I believe, when he signed out of Mexico. He was definitely pitching in low A, I think, at 16. But a hitter, I cannot remember seeing this. We've had some 17-year-olds. I cannot remember seeing a 16-year-old. This is amazing, and it is part of a theme of a couple other players we can talk about that some organizations are like, if you can ball, we're just going to keep pushing you. We don't care. Service time manipulation, be damned. Even if it's in the minors, forget getting to the majors. Like, if we believe in you, why are we going to waste the time to have you torch DSL pitching? Like, we think you can. Also, if you're the Padres and you clearly are desperate for catching solutions sooner rather than later, do I think Ethan Sal is going to be a big leader this year? No. Do I think that they would like him to be the catcher maybe by the time he's 18 or 19? Yes, clearly.
That's the thing here, right? It's very easy to say Padres have no catcher. They have a 17-year-old kid in low A. Will it happen? No. I would like to write an article like, here's why this was never, ever, ever, ever going to happen. However, it is certainly fun to think about. Any other guys you want to talk about?
Well, again, the Padres are not the only ones. The Angels are basically sending guys that they just drafted. Of course, Ben Joyce, Zach Neto from last year. I do want to talk about Ben Joyce for a second, because what was so funny about the people reacting to Ben Joyce's debut, and this is the very hard throwing reliever that they drafted out of the University of Tennessee. He got a lot of attention last year because he reportedly threw a ball 105. I believe it was probably more like 103, 104. But the point is, he is certainly one of the hardest throwers in the world. And the funniest thing about the tweets about his debut was, it was like, only a year after he was drafted, Ben Joyce is throwing 102 in his debut. And the phrasing made it seem like he was throwing 93 last year, and through just like 10 major minor league innings, he has developed this incredible velocity. It's like, no, that's Ben Joyce. That's the point. Like, it's like, yes, it is crazy that they push him this fast, but also not, because this is exactly who you would expect to push this quickly. This is exactly, if they had sent him to the big leagues last year, I wouldn't have been that surprised. And so that's the part where I'm like, that's the development here is not a part of the velocity story.
He had zero saves at Tennessee in college. No. Will he get one in the majors?
I think probably. Again, the Angels right now are in full blown, like, anything that we think we can help you, it can help us win any amount of games, we will do that. Neto has been awesome lately. So obviously there's versions of that that can work out.
His listed nickname on his baseball reference page is the Volunteer Fireman, which is awesome.
Wow. I've somehow never heard of that. That is fantastic. We love that. And then again, just sticking with the theme of young guys, the Braves just called up AJ Smith-Shawver. Now, he's not necessarily a huge prospect name, but he's born in November 2002. He will now be the youngest player in baseball, 5 months younger than Jordan Walker, a whole year younger than Francisco Alvarez, who is currently the youngest player in baseball since Jordan Walker is in AAA. And this was a high school pitcher 2 years ago. And he was I believe he was a hitter most of the time throughout his amateur career, and then moved to the mound full time right before his senior spring. And he's just been amazing this year in AAA. It honestly reminds me of the year that he's had this year, reminds me of Dylan Bundy. When Dylan Bundy did, except with way fewer innings. And obviously we know that that's not necessarily going to pretend amazing career success. But the point is this is unbelievable aggression from the Braves. And it's just so funny because the Braves have been, everyone who follows this stuff knows that they have a bad farm system. And I think that that's true, but they don't care. They're like, oh, this is the one guy that we believe is talented. Great. Okay. Well, he'll just come help our big league team, because what use is he in for the Gwinnett Stripers? None. So very interested by that one.
Enough podcasting. Let us continue with our day and let you do the same. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Stephen Schock for coming on the show. Thank you to Chris Tyler for producing. Thank you to Jordan Schusterman for co-hosting. You can email us whenever you want. Like, we'll read them.
We will. Thank you. BaseballBarbacast@gmail.com. That's BarbCast. And we will be back on Friday, and Jake will not be in America. Stay tuned, folks. We'll talk to you soon.
C SiriusXM podcasts.